26. Chin up. I took some time out after Dundee. People were very nice. Sue Cook called and offered to take me to the zoo one day. She never actually turned up, but then she never does. That's just Sue, as she always says. Bill Oddie was a real rock, too. When he found out Sue had let me down, he swiftly agreed to come along and take her place. We had a nice drive over there. He uses one of those booster seats so he can see over the steering wheel. But later in the day, when we went into the aviary, he seemed to tense up. A cloud seemed to descend. I pressed him about it. "Are you all right, Bill?" I asked, as a bird of paradise landed on my head. "Fine," he grunted unconvincingly, as I shoved it away again. "Well, you don't seem fine," I retorted, swirling my arms around my head to try to keep the bird at bay. He looked me in the eye. "All these people watching birds, without binoculars." "What about them?" "It's cheating." And with that, the bird-mad goody strode off, partly because he was angry and partly because he only had 5 minutes to get over to the other side of the zoo for the seal performance. Other people were there for me too. My assistant would pop round to the house every day to drop off food, do the dishes, flush the loo. I tended to forget. At my lowest point, she offered to help me shower, but even with my swimming trunks on, I think this would have been a bit weird. Although technically my employee, I knew she was doing all this as a friend, and that meant a lot. She came round so often, I'm surprised she had time to get any actual work done. And I think it was that, as much as anything else, that forced me to drop her down to a part-time wage for a while. I did a lot of crying as well, I'm not ashamed to say that now, but at the time I always found ways to hide it, mainly by doing the bulk of it in the shower. That way people can't say what's tears and what's just hot water. Same applies in the bath. Just hold your breath, stick your head under, and let the grief flood out. You'll be surprised how much better you feel. To this day, I still use short-burst underwater crying for all sorts of problems. I wouldn't cry at, say, an unexpectedly large MOT bill. But if I'd received an unexpectedly large MOT bill combined with the death of a good friend, plus I hadn't eaten that day, then I might well weep. I developed a complementary technique called controlled anger release splashing, though it should only be used as a measure of last resort and you will need to mop up afterwards. Against the express wishes of Bill Oddie, I also tried therapy. It wasn't for me, though. I didn't want someone to pick and prod around my troubled mind like a shopper fingering a piece of fruit in the supermarket. I wanted something that would allow my soul to heal in its own time, and that's why I took up pony trekking. It all stemmed from someone telling me I'd feel better off if I exercised. They'd suggested jogging, but what appealed about pony trekking was that you were basically in charge of a vehicle slash being. Also, horses don't complain. They don't criticise you about viewing figures, play hard ball over budgets, or fail to recommission your show. Plus, they're grateful for a sugar cube. I had a little experience of horses previously, not least on Knowing Me, Knowing You. Show jumper Sue Lewis had been a guest and come on the show with her horse, and I must say it made for pretty pleasing television, until she shat on the floor, the horse. But yes, clambering aboard my horse, Treacle, really was just what the doc ordered. Mottled grey and measuring a good 15 hands, you could just tell that she just got me. I truly found peace in the gentle side-to-side bob of her trot, the quiet swoosh of her tail, and the tender plippity-plop-plop of her shit hitting the dirt. It wasn't all plain sailing, though. Probably my lowest ever equine moment was when we were out one day, and I fell badly off the pace. Soon I was totally lost. I began to panic. In an effort to relocate the rest of the riders, I'd taken a shortcut across a dual carriageway. But it was then, as we tried to hurdle the central reservation, that something terrible happened. Treacle stood on a nail. On another day, she might have got away with it, but with a quite extraordinary weight of me on her back, the rusty nail just slid through the hoof, like a knife through a hoof. Over the roar of the onrushing traffic, I heard her whinny. But because I hadn't seen the incident, and because I knew almost nothing about horses, I assumed she was just laughing. The poor girl. By the time we got back to the stable, her hoof looked like a split sausage. She was fine in the end. Even more incredibly, she didn't seem to blame me in any way. She bore no grudge. That was actually one of the titles I was thinking about for this book, She Bore No Grudge, until I realised it made little or no sense. The dignity of these beasts, mind-blowing. After the rides, I liked to stick around. I'd lean on the gate, unwrap a Twix, and watch as the ponies got groomed. I'd marvel at the skill of the stable lads, as they went to work with their hoof-picks, shedding blades, and dandy brushes. I loved the fact that it was like a car wash for horses. I really loved that fact. One day, one of the lads offered to let me have a go, but I got all shy and said no, even though I would have enjoyed it. Not a day goes by when I don't think about that moment. What an error. Over time, though, I did pluck up the confidence to join in the chit-chat. "Lovely grooming, John," I might shout. "Thanks, Mr. Partridge," he might reply. "Except for the fact that there's still shit on Prancer's undercarriage," I might add. I had a smile on my face, but we both knew it needed dealing with. I don't ride anymore. Haven't done for a while. I stopped when Brokeback Mountain came out. It just didn't feel comfortable. I do occasionally go to the stable's website, though. I like to see if they've uploaded any new pictures of Treacle. I also friended her on Facebook. I know it's not actually her that replies, but it's still nice. Just as important as my mental health was my physical shape. Over the previous few years, my body had become flooded with blubber. It was now home to over 5 stones of excess weight. There was no getting away from it. I was clinically chubbed up, and it needed to change. I set about one of the most merciless exercise regimes in the history of Norwich. In the last few years, I estimated that I'd spent somewhere in the region of £54,000 on Toblerone. That's more than most unhappily married men spend on prostitutes in their whole lives. My assistant said that wasting so much money on treat food was immoral, especially with so much starvation in places like Africa and parts of Norfolk. She said the devil had got inside me, which sounds serious at first, but she says that about most people, especially John Craven. But first things first, I had to round up all the remaining Toblerones in my house and get rid of them. Going through my cupboards was easy. The problem came when I needed to find the secret stash. I knew that in the fug of a previous Swiss chalk high, I had hidden a bar somewhere in the house. But where? Never before had I been so badly in need of a metal detector, adapted to detect Toblerone. Instead, I had to search myself through the medium of my assistant. She began by checking the cisterns of all 3 toilets. Then she checked the underside of all tables and chairs. And then she checked in the loft, during which she fell from the stepladder and cracked her head on the wall. But I found nothing. It wasn't until hours later that she'd taken the bus to casualty, found it, hidden in an air vent behind a wardrobe. It was just sat there looking at me, like some sort of confectionery Anne Frank. God, I hate the Nazis. I gathered what remained of my Toblerone supply into just 6 bin bags. I knew that the most cathartic thing to do would be to just give it all away. So that very afternoon, I parked up at my local primary school, wound down my window, and handed bars out to the kids as they walked home. It was just a nice thing to do, and the fact that the police were called says more about genuine paedophiles than it does about me. The constables and I laughed about the confusion, though there's no denying that I looked like a paedophile, many of whom, like myself at the time, are paunchy. It's said they consume food as avariciously as they do explicit images of children. Finally, it was time to commence the total annihilation of all the unneeded flab within the body of Alan Gordon Partridge. In terms of weight, I effectively had a large midget wrapped around my internal organs, and I wanted him gone. I looked into liposuction, but it was too expensive. Besides, well, I knew it could do a good job on tummies and thighs. I wasn't 100% convinced of its ability to cure a fat back. I would have thought about the stomach stapling technique, used to such great effect by Fern Cotton. But it was yet to be introduced at that stage, probably still being tested on rats. My only option was to hit the exercise hard. I started with a regime I found in my assistant's copy of Bella magazine. She very kindly offered to do it with me, but when I thought about her in a leotard, it made me feel all cold inside. The other problem was the squat thrust I was supposed to do. It was a simple question of physics. With the best will in the world, the only way my knees would have been able to cope with the sheer poundage was with the aid of a Silverline SE9 hydraulic jack. I turned my attention to swimming, and it was fun for a while. We figured out that I displaced the same amount of water as half a Ford Fiesta. Not bad for a little lad from Norwich. Not bad at all. But soon enough the local kids started calling me Moby Allen. I gave the swimming up. It was the straw that broke the whale's back. The thing is, I knew one of their mums, and I'd seen her leaving a local hotel the other week with a man who wasn't her husband. Now, I could have mentioned that to a catcalling child, but I didn't. Well, I did, but it gave me no great pleasure. My emphasis changed again. This time I was running. I was a bit nervous as I hadn't been jogging for years and wasn't sure I'd be able to remember what to do. But as long as you keep telling yourself to move your right arm in time with your left leg and vice versa, and to push off with sufficient propulsion, the travel part of each stride airborne, you literally won't put a foot wrong. I used to run along country lanes, with my assistant driving behind, like a Baptist curb crawler. The idea was that if I went below a certain speed, she would just blast the horn. The shock of it would lead to a sudden burst of acceleration. We called it toot and shoot, and it worked. To summarise, then, my drink and drugs heck had taken me to places I never wanted to go, mainly Dundee. I'd like to say I came out of the whole ordeal older and wiser, but I'm not sure I did, though I concede that the age one is hard to dispute. Yet it didn't matter, because by the spring of 2001, thanks to a hardcore diet and the love of a good horse, cheers, Treacle, I was back. I had bounced back.